Blog Talk Radio.
Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, on Friday, August 25th. Today, we're going to catch up with our good friend, Barry Castleman, the Prairie editor. We've got a full plate of political stories to catch up with. Just in the last 24 hours before we started the show, Sebastian Gorka, who was a national security advisor to President Trump, he's resigned. You now have the pardon of Sheriff Arapaio in Arizona. That's not a shock, okay? I had a feeling that was coming. That'll obviously be well received by the Trump base. And then just, you know, obviously this hurricane, and I just want to take a quick second here and send my thanks to many of you who through social media have expressed your support for Texas. Luckily, we live in Dallas, or in what we call North Texas, and we're about 300 miles from Corpus Christi, which is where I think it may be more than 300. It may be close to 400. You know, when you're 300, 400 miles away, you don't get the hurricane. What you get is a little bit of rain or sometimes substantial rain. And I think that's what we're going to get. We're going to get a lot of rain this coming weekend and for the next few days. In Houston, though, with a population of about 7 million people in that area, that's where I'm really concerned. Because that's where you may very well see floods, and that's a lot of people who live there. Obviously, the people of Corpus Christi, they've been very impacted. They're right in the entry point of the hurricane. Galveston always gets a lot of hurricanes. Victoria, another city in South Texas, also getting it. And Port Arthur, where so many refineries have been there for years. They're also getting it a little bit. So we pray for the people of South Texas, the people of the Gulf, and we pray for the best. I mean, stuff like this is never good, but I'm sure that people will come together and do the best as they always do. So our prayers with the people of South Texas. And again, thanks to so many of you who've sent me emails or messages through social media expressing your concern about our family. We're fine. We're doing fine. You wouldn't believe, looking out the window tonight, that there's a hurricane in Texas because we're so far away, but we're going to get rain in a few minutes. Let me say hello to our wonderful friend up in Minnesota, Barry Castleman. How are you, Barry?
I'm fine. And I want to also note this is the first time in more than a decade that a major hurricane has hit mainland U.S. I mean, we've been spared. We had some in the last part of the 20th century and early part of the 21st, but then for the last 10 or 12 years, there have been storms and they sideswiped, but none really hit land and caused damage. And so this one is of great concern, as you point out, and we wish the best for all the people in the hurricane's path.
That's right. And the two hurricanes that, of course, everybody remembers Katrina, that was in 2005. And then there was another one in 2008. I don't remember that one. It was in the middle of the Republican convention. That much I remember. And when the convention was up in Minneapolis, St. Paul. But I don't remember the name of that one. But that one was pretty big also. But you're right. There hasn't been any significant one. So far, this is a Category 4. And, you know, Katrina was a Category 5. Of course, Katrina was compounded by other problems, as you know.
Yes.
There were other things that happened, had those, whatever they were, had they not
levees.
Collapsed. The levees, right. Had they not collapsed, the damage would have been serious, but not what it turned out to be, where the whole city was flooded. That, of course, was just bad luck. I don't know how else to say it. But that was very deadly, Katrina. But the other one in 2008, that was a high point of Governor Perry, how well that all was handled. And, in fact, it was one of the arguments that he used, as you may remember, Barry, when he ran for president in 2012, one of the highlights of his administrative skills. Correctly so. He did a great job managing that crisis. Well, a lot of things are happening in our politics today, actually, just in the last 24 hours. A lot of things are happening. Sebastian Gorka resigned. Sheriff Arapaio was pardoned. You have written some absolutely wonderful pieces at the Prairie Editor about the Civil War and some of those symbols. And so why don't we do this? I'll let you pick topic number one. Let me let you get started. And why don't you get the ball rolling? What would you like to say first?
Well, I mean, I don't know how big piece in the Arapaio piece are. They are of concern to the conservative base of the president. The sheriff basically took the president's side on the issue of immigration. The trial was highly technical, and the president, in his speech yesterday or the day before, hinted very, very strongly that although he wasn't going to do something right away that night, he was going to protect the sheriff, and the word had reached out, had leaked out that the pardon had already been drawn up, and I guess you reported to me earlier this evening that the pardon has now been signed. I'm sure some people on the left will be upset, but I think that this is a perfectly legitimate use of the presidential pardon. One might say that there was a political side to this judgment. We know in Texas there's been a few political trials, political prosecutions that you're aware of that are very questionable, but they use the official grand jury technique and the courts to essentially impose a highly political point of view. And as far as Mr. Gorka is concerned, he is a man of Hungarian extraction, was born in Hungary, was very outspoken. I don't think he said anything wrong, but he was very outspoken on behalf of the president's policies. As you pointed out earlier when we spoke, he probably was part of the Bannon group. And when Mr. Bannon left, it made Mr. Gorka's position quite vulnerable. I think the new chief of staff, Mr. General Kelly, has probably decided that it was time for Mr. Gorka to go. And when all things are considered, if General Kelly feels that was the appropriate thing, I'm going to side with him. That doesn't mean to say that I disagree with Mr. Gorka's viewpoint, but he was a very outspoken. He got a lot of controversial press, and I think there's a feeling now that the administration, especially the White House staff, needs to calm things down and get into a much more orderly process in the daily running of the White House. That's what General Kelly was brought to do. He appears to be doing it and doing it very successfully. So if some people have to go, some people have to go. And
right.
I think that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
I think we all want, even if you don't like the president, you still want there to be a stable White House operation. After all, it's running the country. He's running both the international and domestic policies and our military. And we want as stable and orderly a process, however outspoken. And what was happening was, through the leaks and the internal dissension, that process was not being orderly, and it was giving fuel to the president's opponents that he was not operating in a totally appropriate way. And I think that he finally decided that the man who could bring that about was General Kelly. He hired him. He removed Mr. Priebus. Mr. Priebus is a very capable guy, but he was clearly over his head as chief of staff of the White House in this particular time. He's a very capable guy, but it was a very difficult. There were many, Mr. Bannon has many good qualities, but he has many qualities which are which produce dissension and conflict. And that was not, I mean, the president himself is a disruptor of the status quo. That's enough. We don't need some sub-disruptors
right, exactly.
in the White House disrupting the disruptor. And
that's right.
And
no,
that was what was going
I agree.
On. And
I agree with you 100%. Barry, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I think we're going to get a little more stability now. The president's message will be clearer. The ability of the opposition to, especially the bias. I mean, I have constantly defended the Democrats as an opposition party and those who don't like the president or disagree with him, their ability, their right, their obligation to disagree and to oppose. That's what we do. What I have I've been always quite critical of is a media which is so one-sided and which does not fulfill its function, which is, I mean, there's a double function of the media. One is in its subjective editorial side to say whatever it wants, and that is totally legitimate. And I don't deny anyone, even people I strongly disagree with, their right and obligation to speak out. But as I have said, and using the phrase, the editorial page is not the front page, both in the print media and the broadcast media, the use of what is supposed to be news and supposed to be fairly, nothing is totally objective, but fairly presented. And if it's not, and if your media decides that its job is to take down a president because they once did that with Richard Nixon when it was appropriate, but now they're full of themselves, and they think that their view of the world is the only one that's correct, then there's something the matter, something wrong. And so what we now have is a phenomenon, a situation in Washington. But I think as we're learning, Silvio, as I've written about this, beginning with election night, every situation, the people who oppose the president have decided they're going to take him out. They're going to defeat him. Either they were going to change the popular vote or change the electoral college. They were going to change the popular vote in the individual states in the days following the election. They were going to oust him in one way or another, force him to resign or impeach him. And every crisis produced this, and he comes out stronger every time. That
right.
doesn't mean to say we aren't critical. The president mm-hmm. says some things that are frankly wrong, factually
right.
wrong, and unnecessarily provocative. I mean, I have when he made that statement that John McCain was not a hero, or when he said Tom Ridge wasn't a great governor, was a failed governor, I mean, that's wrong. And I said so. I wrote it out. And he continues on occasion to do this for whatever motivation he has. People say it's to strengthen his base. I pointed out that the tweets in themselves and the technique of using tweets is no different than Franklin Roosevelt using fireside chats. But you can do things in excess. And that doesn't mean we always agree with the president or we agree with what he says. And it doesn't take away from us the obligation, when he does say something wrong, to say so or
right.
to be critical.
No.
And I think the
exactly.
example Newt Gingrich has been defending the president, but you can say what you want about Newt Gingrich. When he feels the president's made a mistake, he says so. And he says clearly.
Yes.
And
he does.
And that's so he's the president. You know, he is not part of the president's staff. He did not. He was could have had any cabinet post. I think he wanted. He didn't want that. His wife is going to be the ambassador to the Vatican. I don't think that's going to change the history of the world. But the fact of the matter is, although I think she's an excellent choice, by the way, the fact of the matter is that even someone who is a defender of the president, and there are many others who defend him on a regular basis, but that doesn't prevent them from stepping back and taking issue when he does something that is unnecessary. And he does.
Yes.
And he's got to learn, and he is learning. And I think one of the things that's hopeful about the whole situation is General Kelly and the fact that he is creating an orderly White House that can function in a very effective way. And if that means that Mr. Gorka had to go, then so be it. If that means that that Mr. Bannon had to go, so be it. I notice Mr. Bannon is not attacking the president. He says he will if he has to, but he is not. Mr. Scaramucci, who had to go, he was not an effective person in the job, but he has been very loyal to the president, even after he's left office. So it's not a question of the president being mean-spirited or creating enemies, although I think some of the opposition would like it to be. They would like some of the people who were close to the president to turn on him, but I don't think that's likely to happen. And I think what we have here is a confrontational situation. The president is disrupting the status quo. He was elected to do it, and believe it or not, it's messy, and he's making mistakes, and it isn't going as smoothly as, because it never goes smoothly. And in fact, it isn't just the Democrats who are opposing him, but there are a lot of Republicans, usually establishment Republicans, including some of my colleagues in the media. And that makes me sad, but it's a free country. And if people like George Will and Bill Kristol want to criticize the president, that's their right. If Governor Kasich, a Republican governor who ran for president, wants to attack the president, that's his right. Doesn't mean we have to agree with him, and doesn't mean they're going to succeed. But it does mean, you know, we still have a free country. We still have free speech. I read today, now I don't know how accurate this is, that the California...
Barry, just one, I wanted to stop you for a quick second, because I wanted to take a break. And then let us take a break, and then we'll have a little bit more time on the other side. But I do want to just, before we get to the next topic, I just want to second something you said. I think that if this is the work of the chief of staff, John Kelly, then I'm in. I support Kelly. I think what you're seeing here is, as you indicated, either somebody has gotten to Donald Trump or he sees himself. What is going on? There's been a little bit too much chaos in this administration. And that happens. That's not the first time. If you remember, Bill Clinton had a pretty chaotic first year as well. But
and Jimmy Carter.
He's got a lot of – and Jimmy Carter. But he obviously has enemies that Carter and Clinton didn't have in the press. But if all of these, all these changes mean that John F. Kelly, Chief of Staff Kelly, is now the guy – running the White House, if that's what it means, I think this is good for President Trump and for those of us who want him to succeed. I do want to say one quick thing about the pardon of the sheriff, Arapaio, or I think that's how you say it, Arapaio in Arizona. I don't really know much about the details of why he got in trouble or why he was indicted. I've read some things that it was very politically motivated, and I'll just, you know, as I said, I don't know all the details, but no one can question the president's ability to pardon. That is his constitutional right. And if he feels that he wants to pardon somebody, look, President Clinton did it. President Obama did it. Other presidents have done it. And that's where it stops. He has the the responsibility to do it. I think it'll help him with his base. It'll infuriate Democrats, but at the end of the day, it won't change his support. If anything, it may strengthen the support of the base. So let's take a little break, Barry. When we come back, we're going to get into a lot more of our politics today with our friend Barry Costa.
This is Carlos Quedes, Heartbeat, and I would like to see you guys this Saturday night at Nola Brasserie Authentic Cajun and Creole Restaurant, located at 1201 Main Street, downtown Dallas. I'll be performing instrumental high-energy jazz at 7:30 until midnight. So make your reservation today at 469-872-1820.
Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, chatting with our good friend Barry Castleman, the Prairie editor. For those of you who remember, Barry has a wonderful website called the Prairie Editor. I have the great honor of being a subscriber. I also got my son a subscription because it's just an absolutely great website. There's a lot of great information, great analysis. And in this segment, I'd like to get into a couple of the articles that Barry wrote. But you were going to mention something there at the end of that segment, Barry, and I think it had to do with Newt Gingrich, if I read it correctly. So if
no,
you could
mention... No, I was just
going to
say... I read today that the California State Senate has passed a bill making, if you don't use the right pronoun, the politically correct pronoun, you can be fined and go to jail. And it's allegedly going to pass the House and presumably would be signed by Governor Brown. Of course, it's totally unconstitutional, and they could pass it, but I'm sure it wouldn't possibly stand the test. But it's that kind of thinking, kind of totalitarian thinking that's going on today with this whole political correctness, in which the president has been the leading outspoken opponent. And that's what endeared him to many voters, including many voters who didn't agree with him on a lot of issues, but who found him to
right.
be a champion. So I just wanted to conclude with that because, you know, as a writer, as a writer, the idea that I can't use certain pronouns, I mean, I mean, what have we come to? It's George
right.
Orwell and Animal Farm writ large. My goodness,
that's right.
1984.
Well, and absolutely. And of course, something like this, as I understand, is also happening in Canada. And speaking of political correctness, I think President Trump is winning that battle hands down. He's doing. If you look at the polling data, on with respect to the Civil War symbols or monuments, substantial majority, 62%, does not want these monuments to come down. Even there was even one poll that had 44% of African Americans didn't want it to come down. So I think he's winning the politically correct battle in these groups. Many of them associated with the Democrat Party, they're making a big mistake for 2018. I mean, if this is going to be the face of the Democrat Party in 2018, that you can go to jail for using the wrong pronoun or whatever the if that's what they think the public wants, they're in deep trouble politically because that's not where the public is at, Barry. But let's talk a little bit about. Yeah, on that one, I think the Democrats are out. I mean, literally, not just left field. They're in the bleachers. That's how far out of the center they are.
They're not even
they
in the
are.
Stadium. They're not even,
they're not
in,
even
the
stadium.
In the stadium. They haven't paid for
no,
their
you're
seats.
Right. Oh, absolutely. I mean, they're like in the highway. I mean, if you want to take this as far as we can take it, they're so far out of the mainstream on this, and I have to believe they're far out of the mainstream of even Democrats who see this insanity
right.
killing their party. There was an article that came out today. I didn't read it, but I just saw the summary of it, of a Democrat who's warning his own party about all this identity politics, how it's dividing the country into little groups, and there's no longer a common American message. Everybody has their own little grief. Everybody has their own little beef, as they say, and the country is suffering because of it. But you wrote an article about the Civil War, and then you wrote an article about history, and I thought maybe we could briefly touch on those, because the one in the Civil War, of course, is very relevant, given all the exposure that Robert E. Lee has gotten. I am not an expert on the Civil War, but I've always felt that it's obviously critical to understanding the history of the United States. And as I've told many friends, I even wrote this in a post at American Thinker, that I didn't come into the Civil War fight with any passion, meaning I was not born here. So I mean, I didn't grow up in a home, Barry, where I was hearing my grandmother telling me about how her great-great-grandfather fought in the war, or maybe her great-great-uncle was killed in the war. I didn't have any of that. I didn't grow up hearing those stories. I didn't grow up hearing the other side either, the Lincoln Union side of the story. So for me, it's always been a historical event. But I've always felt, just on a personal level, that you don't take down history. Now, that you leave it, and you can maybe put more information around these monuments. But to have people literally bringing down monuments as if we were talking about Lenin in the old Soviet Union, or, you know, Stalin or Hitler. I mean, look, one can criticize Robert E. Lee for a lot of things, but I don't think being like Hitler or Stalin was one of them. I certainly wouldn't put him in that category. So talk a little bit about that Civil War article and the symbols, because I thought that was one of the most instructional ones, Barry, that you've written lately.
Well, I focused on Robert E. Lee as one, because there was so many other individuals and things that were going on. And I said at the end, Robert E. Lee is no hero of mine. Now, I realize you're down there in Dallas. I'm sure a lot of your listeners are Southerners and who have a certain place in their hearts for the, not for the necessarily because they're racist or anything else. It was just that was the side of the South, and there's a certain respect for the people who fought in it and in their own forebears who were perhaps soldiers in it, and maybe some of them perished in it. I said to Robert, my heroes were Lincoln and Grant, but I'm respectful of those who think that Lee was a great general and was not, and there's no question, is beloved by his troops, and he was the most respected man during and after the war, much more so than even Jefferson Davis. I did point out that his life is ultimately a tragedy. I did. It was a history lesson. I know my history. And he was a very significant, he graduated from West Point, graduated second in his class. He later became the commandant of West Point. He fought in the Texas War, fought as a very able soldier, well decorated, very well respected. Shortly after Lincoln was elected and the first states seceded from the South, it was clear that there was a crisis coming. Winfield Scott, in his late 70s, was the commander of the U.S. Army. He had been a war hero 30 years before, but he was obviously too old to handle a full-scale civil war. So the president asked him for a recommendation of who should command the Union Army. And you know who his recommendation was? It was Robert E. Lee. So President Lincoln asked Robert E. Lee to take command of the Union Army. Now, Lee, and this was his tragedy and his mistake in my view, he was of the school that said that the state's rights was equal or exceeded the federal rights. That was an opinion that was widely held, especially in the South, before the Civil War. The Civil War settled that question forever. That no longer is a valid argument. But people held that view, and he was one of them. So even though he was offered the command of the Union Army, and as I point out, if he had taken it, he would have become he probably would have become president and been one of the greatest men in American history. And instead of greatness, he ended his life in failure because he lost. I said, he's not a hero of mine. On the other hand, to deny that he was a man of some kind of integrity, he was, by the way, he was also anti-slavery, but he didn't have the courage to denounce it publicly. And he was also against secession. He opposed secession.
Mm-hmm.
In fact,
that's right.
In the first weeks when the southern states started seceding, he accepted the post of colonel in the Union Army and refused offers of a command in the Confederate Army. It was only when Virginia succeeded that he decided, And this was his. So he went to see General Winfred Scott, who was a great figure in American military history. And General Scott had recommended him. And he said, "General Scott, I'm going to refuse the offer, and I'm going to go fight for Virginia." And General Scott said, and it's so true, he said, "General," he said, "Colonel Lee, you are making the biggest mistake of your life." And it was so true, because he
right.
could have had greatness, and instead he had failure. On the other hand,
well, he could have probably
pretend he wasn't
the Civil
there,
War.
To
right.
pretend he wasn't there, or that he wasn't a figure. I mean, he's one of the iconic figures of American history. Everybody knows who
Absolutely.
Robert E. Lee is.
And, right.
And
one thing I wanted to say, go ahead and finish that thought, because I
okay.
wanted to say
well,
something
I wanted
else
to
about
say,
Robert E. Lee.
Whether he has statues in his honor, or you use his name or the name of Confederate generals or Jefferson Davis, that's the right of the community to decide. The community, the political entity, the voters, the citizens. What we had after Charlottesville were tiny extremist groups on both sides, I must say, trying to tell the rest of us what we could or could not do. That is a contrary to the American way. And that was my point.
Right. Right. And not only that, Barry, but some of these groups, like, for example, the ones who brought down the statue to the Confederate soldier, that, I think, was about as stupid as anything any of these groups has done. Because it's one thing to say, "I don't want a statue to Robert E. Lee." Okay, I disagree with it, but I can understand people saying that. But to bring down a statue of a Confederate soldier, or a tribute to the Confederate soldier, who, after all, were men who fought for what they believed. Many of them probably were drafted into service, just like a lot of young men were in other conflicts. So I think to bring down a statue remembering the soldier, I think is always a big mistake. But let me say something about Robert E. Lee, and I'd like you to tell me if I'm right or if I'm wrong on this. Another great contribution, there's a great book that came out, I guess, about 5 or 6 years ago, called April 1865. I have not read the entire book, but there was a documentary, I think it was American Experience, and then I've read the book bits and pieces. But anyway, it was April 65 being one of the most important months in American history, the assassination of President Lincoln, and, of course, the surrender of the South. And in this, the author of this book makes the point that Robert E. Lee, by surrendering and, in essence, accepting the end of the war, made it impossible for other people in the South to continue fighting the war, because there were many who wanted to continue fighting. And Robert E. Lee basically said, "Look, it's over. It's over. I'm not going to get involved in anything. It's over. I'm going home. This war is over. I don't want any more war." And in doing so, he probably did a lot to save the Union himself, Barry. Do you agree with that? Do you think that's a correct assessment of Robert E. Lee?
Well, the point here's the historical facts. He was whereas we had a general in chief of the Union Army at all times, and the last one, of course, was General Grant. The Southerners did not have that. They had several armies, and General Lee was the most famous and had the largest army, the Army of Northern Virginia. But there were other armies, Jeb Stuart. There were other famous Confederate generals who had other armies, including those in the West and in the Deep South, who were still had their soldiers and still were intact at war's end. So what happened, of course, the capital was at Richmond, and once General Lee surrendered, that meant Virginia was gone, and that meant the Confederacy was gone. And the point is well taken. Now, one of the things I wrote is that General Lee not only was a failure in ultimately and made the wrong decision morally and historically, which cost him his greatness, but he was the general who was responsible, in part, as all generals are, for a lot of deaths. Now, I made a point. So Jefferson Davis and Robert E. Lee were the leading figures of their side, and they were responsible in part, in good part, for those deaths. So too were Abraham Lincoln and General Grant, but they were on the right side. They were on the side which had the right principle. It wasn't on the, it's nothing cynical like they were on the winning side alone. It wasn't just they were on the winning side. They were on the right side. You know, one of the things that, you know, that gets lost in all this because there's so much emotion. It's like what was discussed at what happened in Charlottesville. The neo-Nazis are terrible people. They are to be totally, without exception, condemned. And there are no good people in the neo-Nazi fascist movement. None. I mean, if you believe those things, which essentially are Hitlerian, there's something wrong. The president never defended that, but he was accused of defending it, and still is. But the point is, so the news about Charlottesville, the news about this whole process, is being manipulated emotionally, but isn't dealing with facts. So my pieces were, I talked about history as being having two aspects: facts, which are essentially, especially if they're after 1850, we have photographs. Then later we have recordings, we have films, we have movies, we have documents. So there are facts which are basically irrefutable. And then there is the interpretation of history by historians and scholars and people like you and me who talk about and write about history. We make a very subjective thing, and history is constantly being reinterpreted, redefined. And that's what's going on right now. You know, one could ask, well, 20 years ago, where were those people when there were statues of Lee, Robert E. Lee, and those sort of things? Where were those people then? It's very fashionable and right. Being manipulated to be attacking that. And by the way, it isn't just Robert E. Lee. The Democratic right. Party.
That's it.
Has decided that Jefferson and Jackson are no longer acceptable. They no longer have a Jefferson Jackson dinner, of course, because right. they were on the wrongs. They had wrong views and were slave owners or whatever. Mm-hmm. And by the way, I use the example, and everyone I'm sure who's listening has heard about this. The network ESPN has a announcer who's Chinese American. Named
right,
Robert Lee. And they
right.
took him off the air because they were afraid Robert Lee, a Chinese American who has absolutely nothing to do with the Civil War, would be incendiary. I mean, how absurd can it get?
It gets even more absurd than that. You have, you know, the horse at the USC Trojans. I guess that's the University of Southern California, USC. Their horse is named Challenger, I think Challenger is the name of the horse. Traveler, which just happens to be, by the way, the name of the horse of Robert E. Lee. So now
yes.
you've got people connecting these things. But I think you made a very good point, and I wanted to sort of wrap it up with that point. And President Trump made also the same point. Is where does this stop? Because if you're really going to go down this road and you're going to start bringing down every symbol of segregation and the mistreatment of black people, which is true. I mean, that cannot be denied. No one is denying that black people in the United States were mistreated and provided, or treated like second-class citizens. I mean, no honest person can deny that. All right. But how far does this go? Are you going to bring down Woodrow Wilson, who was not exactly the most black-friendly person in the world?
He was a segregationist.
Harry Truman. Exactly. Harry Truman had his side. I mean, you can literally walk into a museum of the Democrat Party and just about take down everybody for one reason or another. A couple of days ago, we learned a very interesting story. Maybe you saw this. Nancy Pelosi has been calling for many of these statues to be removed. Now, of course, she didn't do anything when she was a speaker and had majorities, but that's another story. But her father, who was the mayor of Baltimore, I guess in the late 40s, early 50s, very prominent politician there in Baltimore, gave a speech in 1948 at the statues of Lee and Stonewall Jackson, basically praising these two men and sort of saying, well, you know, we need to come together. We can't, you know, these two men were great Americans and so on and so on. And that, of course, that's very embarrassing to Nancy Pelosi because she's running around saying these things. So my sense, if I could put it this way, Barry, I think that dead people and people should rest in peace. And whatever you did, right or wrong, in history, rest in peace. It can always be analyzed, as you say. We can always add to it, redefine it, as you were saying. But at the end of the day, when you take down symbols, you're not just taking symbols that some people find objectionable, but you're also taking symbols that other people believe in. And for many people in the South, and some of our audience probably agrees with this, because we're having a big battle here in Texas about this, about bringing down some of these monuments as well. Although I think in Texas, the state legislature is going to kill it by saying that it cannot be done. But anyway, that's another story. But I think for a lot of people, this is their history. This is their heritage. And if we've been able to coexist for 150 years, why is it that all of a sudden we cannot coexist? And I really think it tells you a lot, Barry, about the Democrat Party and where the Democratic Party is and how out of touch with reality they are, that they seem to be more concerned with bringing down the statue of Robert E. Lee than bringing down the Obamacare premiums. And I think that tells you everything about the party and why, despite all the problems that President Trump is having, they're not raising money, and they don't seem to be doing any better in 2018, Barry.
Well, I want to conclude with the following, apropos of what you've talked about. The Democratic Party for more than 100 years was the pro-slavery, anti-black party. In fact, until Roosevelt, Franklin Roosevelt, the Democratic Party was a reactionary party. And not only did they oppose black people and were pro-slavery, or at least justified it. Some of them, like who didn't actually, because the North had outlawed slavery, that they were also anti-women. And it was the Republican Party which championed, which abolished slavery and which championed black people. And it was the Republican Party that passed the amendment giving women the vote. It was the Democrats who opposed it. So the tradition and heritage of the Democratic Party is actually reactionary and wrongheaded. Are we now to but that was, you know, in the last 75 years, the Democratic Party has been on the other side. But does that mean we abolish the Democratic Party and dissolve it because of their past? We don't hear anybody in the Democratic Party talking about that. Woodrow Wilson was a strong segregationist, but he's a hero. People are saying the president isn't fit, and yet John F. Kennedy had a fatal disease which gave him acute pain every day. He was hooked on drugs, and he was serially attacked women, or used women. He was all the things that we would call unfit for office, and yet he's a hero to many people. The hypocrisy of this all, the double standard of it all, Sylvia, and of course the American people see through this. That the good news is, and you've said it, and I agree with you. All the polling shows that these emotions that have been aroused after Charlottesville and by these extremist groups are not taking any hold. The American people, the voters, by the way, liberals, Democrats, centrists, as well as Republicans, are rejecting it, because this is really not a Republican or a Democratic issue. And one of the things I'm learning to like the term liberal these days, because at least liberals, like conservatives, represent a reasonable point of view. We may disagree with it. It's these extremists on the far right and the far left that are trying to, and the only way they can do it is by having things like Charlottesville, where they provoke all these emotions and try and create distress and violence. But the fact is that the great majority of Americans, be they liberal, conservative, Democrat, Republicans, moderates, etc., whoever they are, whatever their points of view about a specific issue, I think are rejecting this kind of extremism.
Oh, I think 100%. You're 100% correct, and they're doing it, and good that they're doing it, because, as I said, I cited a NPR PBS poll that 44% of African Americans do not want these statues to come down. And again, that's only one poll. It may be an outlier, but I don't think it is. I think most people, you know, see these scenes on television of these idiots bringing down statues and hitting statues and damaging property. I think most people look at that and say that doesn't make any sense. Well, Barry, I want to thank you as always for joining us. You do great work at the Prairie Editor. I thought your article about the Civil War and Robert E. Lee was fabulous. And there's so much going on politics, on the political arena or in the political arena, that I think we'll probably do a show very quickly here, because there's a lot of stuff going on now that the Congress comes back into town. So let's make it a point of maybe touching base a little bit after Labor Day, and then we'll have a better sense of the baseball season as well. Right now, your team seems to be doing well. The Rangers are picking up speed, and we'll see how it turns out. But as always, thank you for your time. It's always a great honor and a lot of fun to have you on the show, Barry.
The pleasure was mine. Good night.
All right. Good night, Barry Castleman. Barry Castleman, the Prairie Editor. We're going to take a little break, and we'll be right back.
The Canto Group is a recruiting firm located in Dallas, Texas, that specializes in the placement of executives and engineering professionals with companies throughout Texas. If your company is seeking quality candidates in the fields of general managers, plant managers, sales, CFOs or controllers with a manufacturing background, production manager supervisors, engineering specializing in mechanical, manufacturing, industrial, electrical, safety, or quality engineers or designer drafters, feel free to contact our team regarding your company's future or current openings. Contact Silvio Canto Jr., email thecantogroup@aol.com, or visit our website, thecantogroup.com.
Well, another great conversation with our friend Barry Castleman, the Prairie Editor. We have a link to Barry's website on the show information. I would recommend that you check it out. He does a tremendous amount of analysis. As some of you have heard Barry before know, he goes back about 45 years in journalism. He was covering campaigns going back to 1972. So this is a man who has seen a few things, has written about many things. He's written several books. He's well-connected. Many of his friends are people that you see on television and doing commentary on many of the different networks and so on. So Barry's got, as they say, he knows what he's talking about, and it's always a lot of fun for us to touch base and to hear from him. And I thought this article that he wrote about Robert E. Lee was something that we should, I think we should share this article with high school students, because I'm not sure they're getting a good sense of how Robert E. Lee was. And as Barry said, you know, Robert E. Lee was not one of his heroes, but that doesn't mean that he was a bad person. It doesn't mean that he didn't have some great qualities. And I agree with Barry that at the end, Robert E. Lee made the wrong decision. He fought against the Union, and that, in a sense, sealed his fate. But that doesn't mean he was a bad person, or it doesn't mean that he did it with bad intentions. On the contrary, I think we can say about Robert E. Lee that he was a very honorable man. And a man who I think deserves to be treated a heck of a lot better than he's being treated by some of these current, I don't even call them historians. They're nothing but a bunch of opportunists who are trying to distract, I think, many people in this country from the real issues affecting their lives. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas. Thank you so much for listening. Again, thank you for your interest. We're doing okay here in North Texas, but obviously they're not doing well in South Texas, and we pray for them. Good night, everybody.